A quick story before we get started with Peter Uihlein. I ran into Emiliano Grillo on the chipping green this week, and he tracked me down, got my attention, and said, "Hey, saw another video from Scratch. They're kicking your ass." The most recent video of Scratch's adventures in golf takes them to some crevice, some ravine that they play through in Nepal. They weren't even supposed to do it to be at. It is awesome. Be sure to check it out. And then also a bit later in the show, we're going to talk a bit about Callaway's Golf Live series. Their profile of Arian Foster and rap legend Scarface is really, really good stuff. So, but for now, let's get to the podcast with Peter Uihlein.
Be the right club today.
Yes! Johnny, that's better than most.
How about him?
That is better than most. Better than most!
Expect anything different?
All right, ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the No Laying Up podcast. Recircling, you're entering an elite club of two-time visitors.
Yeah.
Mr. Peter Uihlein, we're here in Malaysia. How much has changed since February when we last spoke?
Well, a lot, I feel like. You know, I'm playing on the PGA Tour now, so that's kind
of
cool.
Yeah, that's a little bit of a change.
A little different.
But. So you were a late addition to the field this week.
Mm-hmm.
How's that process work? Padraig Harrington withdrew.
Yeah,
you apply for a sponsor's exemption. You just received an invite from the sponsor. How's that work?
Yeah, I was fully planning on going and playing in Italy this week. Playing in Napa last week, and just kind of heard. I had asked for a spot, didn't get it. Fair enough. And then they said, "Hey, Harrington might be pulling out. You know, do you still want it?" And I said, "Absolutely. You know, I've been out here a few times, and I like the course, and I figured it was just a." You know, it was perfect to.
And you travel, bro.
Yeah, I'm good at it. I'm used to it by now. So yeah, I figured it was perfect, and yeah, can't really say no to these events, can you?
Well, I was gonna say, are you at the point where you're? I mean, you're where you are currently with your PGA Tour status. You're not turning down any invitation you get.
No,
or any
invite. I wouldn't really. There aren't many events if I can get into. I'm gonna turn down,
right?
Just because I haven't played them. I want to play them.
Right.
I've seen them on TV. I want to play them, and. Yeah, the fact that they're all big purse really kind of help.
Right, know, no cut.
Yeah.
You guys love no cut.
Yeah.
It amazes me how much you guys, like one of the first things you guys mention is no cut.
My final five events now are no cuts. Just Christmas bonus money. So it's unbelievable.
Next week is absurd. I mean,
yeah.
Did you apply for a spot in Korea?
Yeah, well, not really. I was going to ask, but then I was told Alex Noren didn't get one. And I'm sure that surprises you. You're the top 10 player in the world. You know, didn't get a spot. So I was like, all right, maybe I can hold off for that. Because I'm in China anyway. So I figured I could go home next week.
You're going to go from Malaysia. You're going to go back to Florida and then fly to China.
Yeah.
Explain that one to me. You could go to like Thailand and chill for like a week on the beach.
I know. Well, we'd be gone.
Your girlfriend is looking at you right now like, why aren't we doing this, Pete?
Well, I don't want to be on the road for 7 weeks, and we have two dogs.
Would it be 7 weeks?
Yeah, Napa, here, week off, four in a row.
Okay.
So
all right, that's fair.
I didn't really want to do that. And we have two dogs at home. We got to go back and see.
Okay.
They pretend to like us, so it
fair
makes
enough.
Us happy.
What is, so guys seem to kind of get excited for this event.
Yeah.
Explain kind of what, and that's why part of the reason why I wanted to come over to this stretch was see what these events are all about. Can you explain in your own words kind of what the appeal is of, other than the no cut thing we've already talked about, what the appeal is of this kind of Asian swing?
I think it gets guys off to a good start in the fall. I think that really kind of helps. And I was chatting to Morgan Hoffman. I think he's just playing this week, next week, and then not playing the rest of the fall. So it gives guys an opportunity to get some FedEx Cup points up after kind of finishing a long season, get some FedEx Cup points off and then shut down for a little bit and get ready for, you know, Hawaii or California or whatever. So
it's almost like you do the Asian swing or the US, like there's three events, three US events, three Asian events. So you kind of choose one. Is that right?
Exactly. Okay. I think that's kind of the perk of it. So I think guys will, play these and then just kind of shut down for the rest of the year. So it is the common word. It just seems like Christmas bonus, Christmas money. That's kind of what it is.
Because it almost, to you guys, it doesn't feel like a new season, I'm sure. And you just kind of, the shutdown really happens in December, essentially, and then you pick back up in January, right? So you're trying to feed off momentum you got going.
Yeah.
Are you exhausted at all?
It's funny. I was out playing at I was out at the Bears Club before I went out to Napa and with Love Mark and with Tway, and they're both on TrackMan hitting, and it's just, you know, the ball speed's way down. They're just like, it's power outage. Off-season, power outage. That's what they kept saying the whole time.
Wow, the ball speed, it decreases that much.
Well, I guess you just finished a really long season,
right?
You know, and it's like, yeah, these are obviously big events, but you're kind of, you know, you're a little tired. You're a little exhausted. So you can see that guys may be kind of a bit more sluggish this week than usual.
Does it feel more like I need to play in this time, or is this something like you're excited to be playing at this time? It's different for you, probably, with you being a new PGA Tour member. But
yeah, it's totally different for me. But I think I need to be playing just because, you know, it's obviously new. It's nice to get some points up early, and then obviously I have a big finish coming up in Europe. So I still need to almost feel like I'm revving back up, kind of thing. Whereas guys seem to be, you know, they might just be winding down or shutting down a little bit.
So you mentioned the big finish you have coming up in Europe. Obviously that's the race to Dubai. Mm-hmm. You are now a PGA Tour member also. So it's kind of, you're in a weird, you're in the next PGA Tour season. You're in the current, I guess, European Tour system. So when you say you have a big finish coming up, what's like the main goal for finishing out the European Tour season?
If you finish top 10, I think that gets you into the Open, gets you into Mexico.
Are you in the Open yet?
Yeah, I think I'm 15th or 16th right now, so I think I'll be in it. Or I think top 30 might, or top 20 might get in the Open. I don't know. So, but if you finish the final,
we're going to get to how you don't know how the system works. I'm very shortly.
I'm really not good. But no, I think so. But it's just they're big events, big world ranking points, and obviously big money. So if you finish inside the top 10, I think you get a nice like big bonus. And then if you finish inside top 15, you get into Mexico, which would be huge for me because that counts towards both tours for next year, which is ideal. So the less I kind of have to kind of globe hop a little bit, the better for me for next year if I'm going to try and play both tours. So
that was the next question. What is your plan for kind of going forward now that you have a PGA Tour card, and we're going to get into how that happened, what the strategy was behind that. But going forward, how are you going to make out your schedule? Do you plan to maintain both cards?
I do. Yeah. I don't think you can really just fully drop over in Europe with the events they have now with that Rolex series. I mean, they are really good events, you know, Wentworth and French Open, Irish Open, Scottish Open. Unfortunately, I had to miss this week at Italian Open, but when they're getting them bigger and stronger and fields are getting better, money's getting bigger. So it makes it, you know, just so much more enticing. So I'll definitely try and keep, you know, I'll definitely play both tours, get, you know, both, get as many starts as I can really kind of worldwide and try and go about it that way. So I don't think I'd ever really fully abandon the European Tour with how good it's gotten with the events.
So how did you, let's hypothetically, why did you choose Malaysia this week over Italy then? Like if this was Napa versus Italy, would you have gone to Italy?
I mean, it's like the no cut
limited field thing was it's part of the reason.
I have FedEx and I get re-ranked. So if I'm basically the way I looked at it is like, man,
explain what that means to people that don't understand.
So, they have a you're asking the wrong guy.
I know. I screwed that up. Mostly because I don't fully know how it works. That's why I asked you.
But I think off of my category, because I'm under the web category, it's based on how many points you make. Then I think you get re-ranked. So if somebody has a really good fall, they'll pretty much jump me if they make more points, if that makes sense. So they'll be next on the entry list. So for me, you know, I was only really playing Napa and HSBC, sacrificing where guys are going out maybe playing five times in the fall, you know, it kind of puts me at a little bit of a disadvantage. Right. So that's why when I got the spot here, it was like, well, that makes it a no-brainer because then it helps me get more points up. That way I can still kind of stay up on top of the re-rank so I can get into all the West Coast events and things like that and then be able to kind of play out where I want.
Okay.
So that makes it easier.
Okay. So what, you missed the cut last week in Napa. Did it feel, you've played PGA Tour events a lot in the past. Did it feel different being out there for the first time as a PGA Tour member? Was it a different kind of pressure, different kind of, you did it not feel like you were like on a guest spot essentially?
Yes and no. That was only, I think, the third golf course in California I've ever played.
Really?
I played more courses in Malaysia than I've played in California. So I'd never really putted on Poana greens before, and I just really, really struggled on them. And I feel like I've been asking everybody this week, like talking about Poana, right. just trying to pick everybody's brains on like what they do and things like that. So, because I know the West Coast obviously is all Poe. So, that was just kind of what it was, you know. But I mean, it was a great golf course and really cool week, chill vibe week, a lot of concerts at night, and obviously the wine was really good. So
that why you missed the cut and the wine was too good?
No, I wish. But I had no idea what I was doing on the greens. But I was glad I played. It really was a really cool event, but it was nice to be a part. I still haven't gotten any of my credentials, so I'm still basically having to go get my photo and say I'm a part, but I'm at least I feel like I'm a part of the tour now, right. Which is nice.
So when you were on the pod in February, I know a lot of people walked away from that kind of surprised at how much you talked about how much you loved the European tour, that you weren't like in a hurry to get back to the PGA tour, and you know you just kind of really enjoying traveling the world and seeing and the experiences you got out of the European tour. And it sounds like you still want kind of keep that as part of your life and your career. But this summer I run into you in England, and you just like sneak in the conversation that you're planning on going to the web final. So what changed as far as your approach towards the PGA Tour?
It's funny. We were in, I got a spot in Puerto Rico this year. So I guess that was April time. Yeah. So April time. And so I top 10 there, got into Houston. So Sunday morning was bad weather, and they sent us out, I think 7:30. They were trying to get everybody done by 2 o'clock or 1 o'clock or whatever. So, you know, we're second group off or something off one. And, I think Luke Donald was right around me. Keegan was like right in front of me, and Hoff was right next, you know, we were all very close. We were all talking about getting home that night. So, you know, after the round, we all fly home together and get home, and you know, we're home, I think Sunday night having dinner, and I just sat there thinking, I'm like, man, this is the first time I've ever made a cut in a tournament and been home for dinner on a Sunday night. Like, never once had that happened to me. So, you know, in 5 years or whatever. So it's like, usually you make a cut, you know, I have to wait till the next day, fly 24 hours to get home on Monday or Monday night, whatever, and then be home. But that was the first time I ever played golf on Sunday morning and then was home for dinner. So that kind of like hit home a little bit. That's like, hey, man.
This could be kind of sweet.
Yeah, this is pretty. This is pretty convenient. These guys are. You know, they
and then here you are in Malaysia now, really far from home. Play
trying to get home on a Monday.
So, I mean, do you anticipate any complications with kind of trying to play both tours? I mean,
I don't think so. The way I was explained a little bit about was, you know, with the whole release thing, I guess is kind of, you know, what you might be asking, but I think they have like a criteria where you have to play an event every 4 years or something, but I don't think it really counts towards guys who are, you know, basically play their first, second, third year because they're just kind of playing wherever. Right. It's maybe more drawn towards guys like, you know, Rory or Rose, guys who play both tours kind of thing, you know, makes them play the event every 4 years. So I don't think in my situation it's really going to be that big of a deal. I think I'll be able to kind of play where I want. I'll get the release and all that stuff, so it wouldn't be an issue.
I just see, I mean, it's hard enough when I look at like the PGA Tour schedule and how good the calendar is on that. I find a hard time, you know, I always picture myself, what would I want to play? What would I do, et cetera? And it's hard to like say, I want to skip these events. And usually it's never two in a row that are like, all right, we're skipping those two. To take that factor of finding it hard to skip PGA Tour events and add in European Tour events that you want to play and kind of the deadlines of when you need to notify tournaments and what you want to play, that doesn't stress you out at all? I'm stressing out about it for you.
No, that's why I pay people to do that for me. No, they're supposed to handle that stuff. I've gotten better over the years that, you know, if I kind of have it made up in my mind that that's where I want to play, I tend to do well. If I'm kind of told I need to go this, play this, be there, and I really don't play that well. So I haven't had a full breakdown of the schedule. I have looked at both schedules, but I haven't really kind of sat down and made up my mind on what I want to do and where I want to go kind of thing. But I mean, once I do that in the off season, I'll have a better understanding, but I do know I want to play more out west just to get another crack at those greens and those Poa greens. So, I'll probably play most of the West Coast, and then there's just so many good events in Europe in the summer, you know, so it's like that's a pretty good gig to, you know, run off, you know, 4, 5, 6 in a row over there. Right. So
I'm trying to get my crew to go do that Irish Open, Scottish Open, Open stretch run. Every year. I mean, that was just as a fan and kind of semi, I didn't work very hard, I'm not going to lie, in those weeks. I played a lot more golf than
I remember seeing you were playing every night or something.
I saw you in Ireland and you were like, shouldn't you be playing right now?
That's right.
I pretty much did play every day. But no, it's kind of a, I don't know, a fun stretch to follow the tour and then play around that, that area from a fan's perspective. But yeah, I mean, all the, I mean, the guys, it's just kind of the nature of professional golf. You guys follow the money, follow the purses, and like the Rolex series now, that Irish Open was getting like 2.5 million euros as of like 2 years ago. And now it's like a 7 million euro event.
But,
I mean,
funny, everybody was still playing that though. Like, I know, obviously Rory played it, but I remember when it was at Carton House and years ago when Paul Casey won it, you know, that still had an unbelievable field.
Yeah.
I can't remember where it was the following year, but that's always been a strong staple one. And the dates have moved. That used to be like in May.
That
I
was
think.
In May. Yeah. Yeah. Even as in 15, it was in May.
Yeah.
This year was the first year that it moved up to in front of the Scottish Open.
Yeah. Which is perfect time for it.
Yeah. And it is, but they were kind of hoping, I think, that they would get more American guys to come over and play it. And it's tough to ask guys to come over and play three straight weeks.
Yeah.
I don't think anyone did.
It's hard to get guys to play 3 weeks in America, let
That's
alone
true.
Overseas.
Right. So, I mean, some guys want to come over, play the Scottish just as a warm-up, but a lot of guys didn't last year because Dundonald was not a great warm-up for Birkdale.
Yeah.
Next year is Gullen for the Scottish Open and then up to Carnoustie.
Right.
Have you ever played Gullen before?
It's in
East Lothian. It's kind of near like North Berwick and Muirfield.
Yes.
Okay.
I think I've played there. The Scottish Open was there a couple of years ago.
It was in 15 or 14.
Yeah.
14
yeah.
Where Ricky won there.
Yeah. All right. I played there.
Okay.
First hole just dead straight up the hill.
Yeah. It's the whole course is like based on this one hill, essentially.
Right. Yeah. I remember. Yeah. I've played there. That's
but then you go up to Carnoustie. It's not a far. It's not a far trip, and they're. I mean, not similar courses, but I don't think it's as
now,
different.
Now, but Gullen's at least a little bit more linksy than this one was. What was
Dundonald?
Dundonald.
Links.
Yeah.
Did you play that one?
I did.
Yeah.
Smooth MC.
Yeah, I wasn't a big fan of that course. Yeah. That whole area is unbelievable for golf. And
there was like two courses next door that looked amazing.
Western Gales.
Yeah, Gales. That's
is
right.
Unreal. It's
yeah,
so good. I don't
phenomenal.
Think it really has tournament holding capacity.
Yeah, it was too short. Everybody was saying it was
short,
too short.
And I just don't know if it can manage a crowd.
Did they have the Scottish Women's Open the following week? At Dundonald as well?
They did.
I think they hosted it back-to-back.
They did, yes.
Just like this one is.
Yeah.
This one's doing back-to-back.
Yeah, I don't know if there was any controversy on the
way to go.
Driving race. I didn't do it, man. It wasn't me. The PGA Tour also tweeted a video of like everybody warming up all over the course. So how it works this week, there's not really a driving range. Have you seen the concrete driving range? Or the
left on nine?
Yeah.
No, I've
Have
not.
You been there before?
I've just seen the netting.
So supposedly, when the European Tour, it was the Maybank?
Maybank was out here, yeah.
That one year, I don't know what year, that they used that as the range, and like players were tweeting about it as the worst range ever and whatnot. So now they use like a hole from the East course that the women are going to play in 2 weeks. It's kind of for you guys to hit this week, which, I mean.
The 2 years I played Maybank, we've used this these holes as a range.
Right. And then so yesterday when there was, so we're recording this on Saturday afternoon, there was the rain delay. You guys all had to go back and warm up. So guys were just sprawled out across a couple extra holes hitting balls and warming up, and some LPGA players were not excited.
Sorry, I did see people in front of the chipping green hitting over the trees.
I did a couple spots.
Yeah.
But I don't know. You guys play ball in hand. I would assume the women are going to play ball in hand. Some people were DMing me saying that they never play ball in hand for some reason. But like for this week, can you imagine not playing ball in hand?
No, that'd be terrifying.
I mean, it's mud. The fairways are mud.
Yeah, they're soft, and the fact it's been raining every night doesn't help. But the greens are firm. At least the greens are rock hard. But that'd be terrifying.
A quick break from Peter Uihlein to talk to you guys a bit about Golf Lives, which we talked about at the beginning, which is a new docu-series from Callaway Golf. You may remember rap legend Scarface was in the very first episode that they profiled, and the most recent episode shows Arian Foster, which is really, seriously very good video content. Arian Foster swings the club at 115 miles an hour, and he's always been a very insightful person, so to watch him kind of talk about golf and kind of talk about how, you know, he didn't have golf growing up as a kid and how now he's retired with money at age 31, how much of a role golf plays. And if you listen to this now, Monday, October 16th is going to be the debut of the showdown between Arian Foster and rapper Scarface back in their hometown of Houston. It's a highly anticipated event. You can watch the entire series now at callawaygolf.com/golflives. I promise you won't be disappointed. It's honestly very good stuff. But for now, let's get back to Peter Uihlein. So what do you think of TPC Kuala Lumpur?
I tell you what, once TPC got a hold of it, they pumped some money into it. Yeah. They've dolled
it's
it up.
It's incredible condition.
Yeah, they dolled it up. The cuts around the water and the bushes and the flowers, they've done a really good job over. Because we went, I guess it was like 3 or 4 years ago was the last time I was here. You got to make a bunch of birdies. It's right. A wedge fest. You just got to make a ton of birdies. And I didn't really see what Perez is at. I know he's
21 under.
Is he 21 through 3?
Yeah, Saturday afternoon, so he's up 4, 21
under.
That's
pretty good, yeah. I mean, it's just a wedge fest.
Ball in hand with wedges, you guys are going to tear it up.
There's a couple strong holes, but, you know, it's still their driver 8 irons, really, if they're, if they're considered real strong. But, no, it's a wedge fest, and, yeah, you just got to get it after. The greens are at, like, a nice speed that you're not afraid of it getting away from you, so you can really be aggressive and hold some putts.
The narrow fairways are what makes it not appealing to me visually, but I don't know, I've watched a lot of golf the last 3 days, and you guys don't miss the fairways too often here
when they're soft.
I know,
it makes such a difference. Like that sixth hole, I've hit driver every time, and it's fairways 10 yards wide. I've hit the fairway every time, and it's just because it hits on top and just sticks there.
Yeah,
but
I played the pro-am Wednesday and I did not hit a fairway.
Did you not?
I did not hit a fairway.
Did you go for 14?
Just assume the answer is yes. Yeah, I got it over on 14. Nice. I did. It was left of the green, and it plugged, and we almost never found it, and then a guy found it.
Well, that's not so bad.
I cleared it. That was my badge of honor.
I'm shocked they didn't move that tee up today.
It was 320, I think.
Yeah.
A little downhill, but I got it. I was pretty excited about it. But, man, I hope. I play with Patrick Rogers. I hope he doesn't start spreading word about that. I lost like 7 balls.
It was worse than when I played with you at... we're in Cleveland.
Yeah. Nice. Wow, I didn't think I played that bad. It was that bad of an impression. I shot like 79 from the back tees with you guys. It wasn't like horribly embarrassing. Yeah. It wasn't good. What'd you think of Wolfhammer?
Wolfhammer was awesome. I just wish I knew how to if I played with you, you knew how to keep points. Because like I just couldn't do it.
Right.
But the games were awesome.
Yeah.
Like
it's not that hard. Once you get it. How many rules can you remember? I quizzed you on it during the middle of the round. You did pretty good. But
I did all right. I remember some of it. I like the fairway green point, the pole green point. Yeah, the up and down. Or the bunker. What's that one?
Sandy,
yeah.
Junk man is if miss the fairway, miss the green, make par.
Make par. Which one's the Saddam?
Saddam is bunker to bunker.
Bunker, bunker. Yeah. Yeah.
The Adolf. Two shots in one bunker.
Yeah.
The Bin Laden bunker to water.
Bin Laden bunker to water. That's right.
The OJ. Double digits. Yeah. Double murder. It gets pretty. It gets out there. But yeah, you took like $60 off of me. Yeah. So that's why you like it.
I did like that game. Yeah.
Yeah. All right. So web finals. The story needs to be told of, so you show up up at the web finals, the first web final event at Scarlet Course in Columbus, came out and watched, and you won. You won the very first event. Just showed up and just won. It's not a big deal, right?
Yeah.
And what did you tell me when you walked off the 18th green?
My mind at that point was like, man, I can go play now. I can go play in Switzerland and British Masters. I don't need to play anymore. Like, I got my card. I'm out, you know? But... yeah, you were like, no, you should probably stick around.
You came up and you were like, my web.com tour career is over.
Yeah,
I
was one and done. And that's not true. I played twice in college. But yeah, it was one pro event at web done. I was thinking in my head, I'm like, this is great. I can go back and play some in Europe, you know, whatever, no big deal. And they're like, no, you should probably look into that. You should probably keep playing. I mean, obviously, you have a goal to get it done. But then Chesson kind of blitzed it and...
You had your tour card locked up, but to win the finals, you get into the players, your priority goes skyrocketing. It wouldn't have been hard for you to win the finals if you kept playing. Did you now wish you didn't keep playing so you didn't end up winning?
I kind of wish, I kind of wish.
Did you skip the tour championship?
I did, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. I felt bad about it, but I wanted to have a week off before nap. And then because because I was going to play 6 out of 7. I needed another week off. So
I negatively affected you. Then you could have just.
No, it wasn't your fault. It was.
Well, you were gonna go to the like to your press conference or whatever and say that you were done.
I was done. Yeah, she saved me a little bit because I would have looked like an idiot. So that would have been bad. But so that was my web career. Oh, I mean, hoping that's my web career done. So, but I'm glad I played Boise. Boise is a great city. Great city. Cool little golf course.
It's funny, when we did the pod in February, we were laughing about, like, because like, part of the reason why you wanted to play the European tour is because you just weren't that keen on playing the web tour full time because you didn't necessarily want to go to Boise.
Yeah.
But it turned out Boise
is actually a really nice city. Yeah. I really enjoyed Boise.
What do you think is going to be, like, what do you, I don't know. I was going to ask kind of what are you going to miss most about playing the Euro tour full time, but it doesn't sound like it's going to feel that different to you.
No, I probably the only things I'll skip or I don't know if I'll skip. I'll have to, like I said, I'll have to look at the scheduling with like Abu Dhabi, Dubai, because I really like those events. It helps my coaches out there as well, so it kind of adds, it's like a little extra bonus to Sam. And I'll probably miss the events that I can think of off the top of my head that I've played this year. I think Shawnee Open I'll miss, India I'll miss, I think a couple events in China I'll probably miss, and but it just depends what I can get in stateside as well. Right. So it's a nice kind of like, I don't want to use the word fallback, but it's a nice thing to have that, hey, it's like, oh, well, if you can't get into Riviera, well, there's an event in Europe going on, I can go play over there.
Right.
Which is perfect.
And you're used to jumping that travel. Yeah. It's not a big deal to you.
Yeah, because like I spoke to Kevin Tway when I was in Puerto Rico. And this was before he had, you know, a great run. I think he finished 3 straight top 5s or something. So he was well down on the re-rank. And he said he Mondayed into Riviera. But other than that, he got into Torrey, I think he said. And he hadn't played for 6 weeks up to Puerto Rico. And it's like, man, that's...
sucks.
Yeah, that's rough, you know?
Tough. That's why I was trying to tell you, you got to go win those finals, man.
Yeah, you're right. But so at least I can kind of look at it that way. It's like, you know, if I'm not getting into these events, and it's like, all right, well, I can still go play in Europe and keep my game sharp and, you know, try and, you know, I guess just jump up the world ranking, things like that. So that makes it nice.
Do you have, like, goals necessarily for the PGA Tour next year? I mean, is that...
No, because I'm still, like I said, because I still have to
work. Depends on what you get.
Well, and I still have to finish this year.
Right.
You know, so it's like this year to me is, my year's not over. You know, it's like everybody's, you know, next year started for them, but my year still hasn't finished yet. So, you know, I'm still trying to complete the goals for this year and then starting up, and I think Sony's first off. So starting up over there will be starting with a new set of goals. So
it's kind of a tough question to ask or to answer, I'm going to imagine, but it's like you've had a lot of success on the European tour, but it's not like you were dominating the European tour to the point where it just, you had to graduate to the PGA tour. Mm-hmm. So where do you kind of feel like you slot yourself into when it comes to your where you belong on the PGA tour? Because I know internally some friends and I, we've discussed, we're already excited about the Ryder Cup next year. We're talking about potential guys. I would consider you in that category.
Right.
I wouldn't consider you a favorite for that at this point. So do you think that far ahead, or is that kind of way more result thinking and not process thinking?
Yeah, I think that is. I think my first, I guess, goal is finish out this year. I want to get top 50 in the world. That way I can kind of, you know, get into the Players, Masters, things like that, get into majors. And that's how you make those things, is once you're in those majors, WGCs, that's how you get.
What's your ranking right now?
I think mid-70s, I think. Okay. So that's how you get into those, the whole Ryder Cup discussions and things like that. So I don't know. The way the U.S. team played this year at President's Cup, that was pretty impressive. So
it's a tough team to crack.
Yeah, it's a tough team to crack. And, I mean, U.S. golf's, yeah, it's going to be good for a long time now. So it's pretty exciting.
We just spent the entire last podcast
just raving
basically
about
celebrating
it.
Yeah. 2018. And the Euros were not that excited about that. But
no, they'll be good as well, especially in France. It's always tougher to play on there.
Yeah, it is. It's definitely tougher to play there. Yeah. But I think, I don't know. That last one was such a beatdown that I know.
Yeah.
People were all over me for getting way too excited about that one. But that's beside the point. Yeah. But I just didn't know where you felt like kind of where you belong. Because I mean, I've talked to guys, and I know you guys never want to put yourself too far out there in terms of being too outspoken about your confidence. But just in talking to guys in the past, you know, someone like JT saying, like, I was watching Spieth win all these tournaments and felt like, you know, I'm as good as him. And then he has this kind of breakout year where he kind of proved that. So I didn't know if there was something where you're kind of like, you know what, I grew up with these kind of guys and feel like I'm on this level. Now I just got to go prove it.
Yeah.
But it also kind of puts you in a tough spot to answer that. Yeah. I understand that.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm not. Yeah. There's some. Yeah. I guess that's all I can say. Yeah. But I mean, I do play with those guys a lot. And I know where my game stacks up. Yeah. And although I didn't win a lot in Europe, I felt like I contended more over there than I would have here in the States at an earlier age. Yeah. So I feel like I've gained a lot more experience being in contention. Like I said, albeit didn't win a lot, like one time. So, but at least I got in that position a lot. It felt like to me a lot that, you know, if I come over here, I can feel a little bit more comfortable in situations.
You feel
like
you belong when you show up.
Exactly.
Here. Yeah. Yeah. And that I would imagine that makes a big difference.
Yeah, it does.
If you come out at 22, 23 or whatever, and you're playing full time on the tour, there might be a adjustment period where you're kind of figuring out if you belong.
Right. Yeah. It's almost one of those things where you guys come off first year out and it's like, oh, that's a heck of a job to just keep your card. Well, it's now that I'm, you know, my first year on tour, that's not really my mindset. It's just to keep my card.
Like, right.
I'm trying to win. I'm trying to get top 50. I'm trying to, you know, like you said, make the Ryder Cup. I mean, that's, you know, what I feel like, you know, you want to try and do.
How many tour events did you play this past year? And like, were you trying to get like the non FedEx, I mean, I'm sure you were trying to get, so you could have qualified with your sponsor's exemptions if you got equivalent to the previous year's top 125 points FedEx now. Cup points. Yeah.
Yeah, it's points now. I think Puerto Rico and I think I had a top 25 in Houston and Memorial, and I made the cut in Saturday cut in Memphis, and but kind of after that, like when I guess maybe I was thinking that at that point, but when I played well with the French and kind of jumped up the race to Dubai, I kind of put trying to get my card that way kind of on the back burner.
Because you had the web finals to fall back on.
Exactly. Yeah. I knew I figured I already had that locked up. And then obviously with the race to Dubai, I got to, like I said, I want to try and finish high up that way. So I felt like that allowed me to play those web finals, which was a nice little perk to have.
I feel like you're as good of a guy to ask about this as any. What do you feel about the future from a world tour perspective? And you know, probably want it right now.
Yeah. You know,
do you fear, like, my fear on it is it makes a lot of sense for like top 100 guys.
Yeah.
That next tier, those guys don't sound too crazy about the idea. It sounds like it's going to happen.
I could see it happening. I can almost like I don't want to say for the betterment of golf, but like, it could be like to help grow the game.
Right.
Like the money is like over in Asia. Like this is kind of where the cash is. Looking next week in Korea, $9.5 million.
$9.25 million for 80 guys.
Yeah.
It's the largest purse, non-major, non-WGC, non-players.
This is Asia's, any of them. Asia's where like they want top players.
Yeah.
Like this is where it's going. And you know, you kind of have, you know, I think the PGA Tour China, I don't know if that's fallen off or not. I don't know if that's still around. So that's become basically a free market, you know, if Europe pounces on that. And I know there's been talks with Europe trying to join with the Asian tour and all these other tours and basically trying to get a global tour. And then, you know, PGA obviously has America and Canada, and Latin South America. But, I just feel like for the betterment of the game, I think maybe a global tour would be great. You know, it just helps grow the game, get more people involved, get more people interested. I mean, if you can get a country like China that has that many people involved, and I mean, that'd be huge for all the companies and all the industries. So,
I just look at, like, I think this Korean event is going to change things. I really do. I think it's a big deal. I've heard guys buzzing about it this week, and I think, I don't know, I have no idea what their future plans are for a tournament in Japan, but I think that would make a ton of sense.
But they have their own tour.
They do.
Great. And the Japanese tour is really, really good.
But I mean, this is a co-sanctioned event with the Asian tour.
One Asia. This week. This week's Asian tour. Next week's One Asia, right? Or is it Korean tour? Well, it must be. It's got to be Korean.
I don't know how that works. Yeah. I'm not going to lie. It's my first time over here.
Yeah.
but so like, why couldn't you co-sanction one with, I guess it's not the same network.
It's funny. I was chatting to somebody last week about doing a co-sanctioned like PGA European tour, like if they would ever do it. And I forget the answer, but it kind of just came up in a conversation that it's like, hey, that actually could technically work. But
they do that with the WGCs, yeah. But there's also PGA Tour events and European Tour exactly. events the same week. So, yeah. So there's two issues in the game I want to talk to you about. One we've talked about a bit to start. It's the easier one. Don't I see your eyes? Sorry, good. Backstopping. What I'm calling backstopping. It's when you guys are playing and let's say you've chipped up 2 feet past the hole.
I saw y'all talk about that with the Finau thing.
Yeah.
Wow. People are right there. They're all going your ball off on that.
Behind the hole and not marking it while your opposing player, your playing partner is chipping.
I can see both sides. Okay. I can see, yeah, obviously it doesn't look great. Like it does, it could come off as looking, wow, that's, you're helping that, you know, you're not protecting the field, blah, blah, blah. But I could also see it like if it was my shoes and I chip it close and somebody's in the bunker, I don't want to run up there because then they'll think, wow, you're a dick, you know? You know, but yeah. Like, obviously, because it could be like you could be playing with a buddy. Like, I don't know who Finau was playing with. I don't know what
it was. Jason Kokrak's ball, and supposedly he was like 30 yards down the fairway. He was hitting
It's a gray area. It is a very gray
area.
It's
tough.
And I don't know. I don't know.
There's
some
instances though when you guys have plenty of time to get up there and mark your ball.
I totally agree.
So the question is. And Jeff Shackelford's made this point. Go ahead.
So if it's me, if I'm in the bunker and I see the guy I'm playing with, you know, going rather quickly up to the, I'll let him go.
Yeah.
You know, if his hand's in his pocket, I'll let him go. But if he's kind of just stood by the side of the green and staring at me.
Right. Just play.
Yeah. I'm just going to hit it.
So, yeah, the technical rule is if player A has stated that he wants to mark his ball,
you have to
let him.
Right. Yeah, yeah.
But no one ever does that.
There's something funny with that. I remember thinking in junior golf, I was playing somewhere, and once you, like, if I was going up there to mark it, and I asked them if they want me to mark it, they can't, like, I have to mark it at that point. Like, if there's something like that, like, I remember thinking I was in, like a Cannon Cup thing, and I got a penalty or something, or I lost the hole because I asked them to not mark, or I don't know. There was something weird, but there is.
You can't ask them to not mark it.
I don't think. I don't think that was what I asked.
And if they want to mark it, you have to give them a chance.
Yeah, they have to mark it. Yeah. So that's why if like I see a guy, even if he's 10 yards off the green, if his hand's in his pocket, looking like he's going to mark it, I'll just wait and let him go and mark it. But if he's just kind of like standing by his bag or just looking at me, then it's like, all right, well, then I'm just going to hit.
So I've seen the point made, and I've heard Jeff Shackelford make the point of like in college events, you don't, with your teammate, you wouldn't leave your own ball there. That's the argument against doing it, and you don't see it really with Ryder Cup, President's Cup, guys leaving their own ball close by a hole to potentially be used. I mean, I don't.
I guess I've never seen that like in four balls.
Right, like, but you don't see guys even do it. You don't even bring that.
You don't even see
into
the
question.
You don't even see like the fishy thing of like a guy like hitting it too far by to give him a line kind of thing.
Right. You don't ever see any of that. So that's where kind of it's kind of a little bit of a buddy system. So I initially rolled my eyes at it, and the more I've kind of paid attention to it, I'm like, just in general, in the theory, obviously you play with playing partners to keep score and for whatever reason, but in theory, a player's ball should not affect your own ball. And I know it may seem minuscule, but that it kind of culminated into the Finau moment, which it cost Chesson Hadley and Phil. I don't feel bad for Phil, but for Chesson, FedEx Cup points, $100,000, and it could have been a T2 if that ball doesn't hit Kokrak's ball. Yeah. And I just think it's kind of a hot button item, and I've heard some players weigh in on tour and just kind of wanted to hear a player kind of talk about it.
I've seen a few people talk about it, and I don't know. It's like, it's just kind of like what I said. Like if somebody's running up there.
Right.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's not outside the rules to do it. And that's where some people will play, look, I'm going to use, and I don't like the phrase use the rules to my benefit, but say I'm still playing within the rules of the game to do this. And I think by all means you are.
The thing that I find kind of funny, it's like people are like, well, you're using it as a backstop. It's like, well, if I'm going to hit that golf ball, you'd think I'd aim at the hole. Like if I was good enough to hit that ball, I should probably like aim
at the
ball.
Right, but if you miss, it could help you.
Yeah.
I know you're not aiming for the ball.
Right.
Nobody's aiming for the ball,
right,
but it could potentially help you. Yeah. So.
Yeah. I don't know.
I know.
I don't know.
It's a gray area. But I've talked to some players that are like, it's totally within my right, and technically it is.
Yeah.
And I've talked to some players who are like, nah, like that wouldn't fly with me. Like, I hate that, blah, blah, blah. I hate what I'm seeing out of some of this stuff. So
that's right. Area. You can kind of, you
embrace debate.
Yeah. You could see guys hating it. And then, but I don't know. Like, it's I wouldn't. Like, it just depends who you're playing with as well.
Yeah.
It makes a difference.
But it's like, but it kind of like goes down to if it's 72nd hole. And you're playing against the guy that, you know, is beating you by one and your ball's right behind the hole. You're marking that.
Yeah.
Ooh, I just got you.
Maybe. I don't know.
But all right. Thank you for indulging me for these hot topic issues and catching up on everything going on with your career. Best of luck the rest of the fall series, the race to Dubai, and, of course, next year on the PGA Tour. And we'll have to have you back again soon.
I appreciate it. Thanks for having me.
You got it.
Be the right club. Be the right club today.
Yes! Johnny, that's better than most. How about him? That is better than most. Better than most!
Expect anything.